The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Chronicles, where today we're going to be talking all about Amadeus by Peter Schaffer. And here to talk about this magical world of opera and music is not necessarily a court composer, but he is a thought composer.
Ooh.
It's Josh Firm. Hi, Josh.
What an introduction for my Chronicles debut.
No, thanks for being here, man. It's going to be a good one to talk about.
So some of you in the audience may know me. I should bloody well hope so.
yeah, I'm introducing you to the audience.
But you might be saying, what does Josh know about high culture other than, you know, sounding a little bit middle class? And
occasionally shooting pheasants.
If only. And alas, I live in central Swindon, so it'll be more peasants than pheasants, but that's not an admission of guilt, by the way. So, yes, obviously, I don't necessarily have a background in classical opera or classical music. However, I am a musician that also listens to music that is classical in nature. And believe it or not, before reading the play and watching the film, which, by the way, top five films of all time for me.
Masterpiece. Total masterpiece.
I had heard of Mozart. I know it's hard to believe, but I've heard of the guy. I've listened to some of his music.
Kind of a big deal, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, in my household, we played like classical music quite often. So it was something I've been brought up with. And so watching the film as my introduction to the play, so I watched the film before the play. I was immediately sucked into this world and found it very compelling in a way that took me by surprise, because it's a 3.5 hour film, the director's cut. And over the past 3 months, I've watched it 3 or 4 times, which is a lot for a film that long.
Well, the testament to the quality of the actual film.
And that's wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose, because I, like you, was, you know, I discovered the film first and then realised that it was a play many years ago. I have actually been to see a theatrical performance of Amadeus at the National Theatre, and there was a lot that was really good about it. I mean, sure, it's set in London, so they've race-swapped it, and Salieri is played by a black man, but like to have, you understand, like in its original environment, when this play first came out in 1979 at the National Theatre, you know, to have the orchestra, to have, you know, to hear Mozart's music, to hear Marriage of Figaro, Don Giovanni, all of these great musical pieces that Mozart was obviously famous for, intertwined with this very, very, and I want to preface this, heavily fictionalized version of history, right? Very little in here, and the events that we're going to talk about and the rivalry between Mozart and Salieri really has any basis in true history.
In real life, they were good friends, weren't they?
They were, they were. But even though the play in its entire narrative of conflict with Salieri and Mozart is fictional and, as you say, doesn't really map onto actual history. I think one of the important points to make is that even at the time, rumours of similar things were taking place after Mozart died, very quickly after he died in 1791. All sorts of rumours were swirling about that he had been poisoned, that somebody had killed Mozart. And when Salieri tried to commit suicide in 1823, you know, three decades later, a part of that was due to a mental breakdown that he was going through due to all of the rumours and gossip naming him as one of Mozart's apparent murderers. And so even though he denied it at the end of his life, it was something that even there, you know, in that era of classical music, was rumour was spread about it throughout throughout European societies. And so eventually you get a play being written only 5 years after Salieri died in 1830 called Mozart and Salieri by the famous Russian writer Alexander Pushkin. And so, and then you had an opera as well that was made based on Pushkin's play in towards the end of the 19th century. And then and then eventually you get in 1979 this Amadeus, this play by Peter Schaffer. And it's brilliant, but it very much is working within, it's a product in its own way of all of the rumour and gossip that was around 200 years mm-hmm. before. So it's
and
quite
I think
remarkable.
It's also depicted quite, the gossipy nature is much more present in the actual play than in the film.
Yeah, with the Venticello.
Exactly.
Venticello, yeah, the little winds.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I think that there's a sort of reveling in gossip and a sort of playfulness in the writing of the play that is manifest in the film in the character of Mozart. But in the book, it's sort of the world that is given this veneer of this playful, gossipy thing. And there's jokes in there that, you know, actually made me laugh out loud. I'm not even sure if they're intended as jokes, but they're sort of blunt points of dry humour.
Yeah.
Which you don't expect. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I like the way, for example, just to jump ahead a little bit, the way that Salieri introduces all of the different characters in the play, his little ways of explaining their personalities in very concise bits, where he talks about, you know, a Kapellmeister Bono, you know, and being the Kapellmeister, you know, the conductor for the Italian opera. And Salieri is really just waiting for him to die so he can take over his position as Kapellmeister. And Bono's just not granting it. Seems to be sort of a tenacious, stubborn disregard for other people in the name Bono. who knew? It seems to be a running thing. There is a lot of overlap, obviously, with the film being an adapted screenplay, and obviously just worth saying as well that both the play and the film won numerous awards.
And deservedly so.
Yeah, deservedly so. But as you say already, there are differences. I remember when I did A Man for All Seasons with Bo on Chronicles, and we were talking about how that one by Robert Bolt, the play which came first, felt more like an extended edition of the same script, but actually the dialogue was almost copy and paste. A lot of it was really the same between the two mediums, whereas this is actually a little bit different. The ending in particular is very, very different, to the point that Schaffer came out and said he preferred the ending in the actual film, and I do too.
What a good sport.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Now, I think as much as it's a sort of low and uncultured thing to say, I did prefer the film to the reading the screenplay. Mm. And of course, there's more life to a film than there is reading a play, which is obviously just a foundation for something greater.
Sure.
However, I think even with my mental representations taken from the film, the world in which the film constructs is more compelling to me than the book. Although some of the iconic lines in the film are in the play, basically verbatim.
Yeah.
So all of the best notes are originally from that play.
Too many notes.
Good reference.
Yeah. So let's begin, shall we, by... So the entire narrative is framed around... You're looking at Salieri, this aged composer who has been a great success in his own day. And in about 1823, and really this is a this entire play is his confession to the audience for all of the evil, corrupt, sinful things that he's done in his life. In this, basically, there's no other way to put it, war on God, right? Salieri himself waged war on God, but it wasn't always like that to begin with. And mm-hmm. You see a young boy born in 1750, around and somewhere near Venice, you know, Italian, with a father who, so Salieri was born and he just had this natural love for music. You know, he really believed that music was the greatest form of art, and that it was through music.
He describes it as the language of God, yes. Basically.
Yeah. And so through that's how we communicate with God, through music.
I actually very much understand where he's coming from.
Mm.
And if you're particularly musically minded, the sort of feelings you get when you're listening to music as a musician, it feels like almost the language of God or of the universe. There's something almost transcendent and outside of oneself. And of course... If you really drill down into it, it's music is mathematical in its entirety. It can be analysed entirely mathematical because it's, of course, the vibrations of sound and also patterns and frequencies.
Mm.
And so that there's some argument to say that it's manipulating the universe in a way in which resonates with something more transcendent.
Mm.
And this is one thing that I wanted to go into as an overarching thing that I like about Amadeus, both the play and the film, is that there's such a rich selection of deep themes throughout both iterations.
Mm.
And there's so much to think about, so much to go away and contemplate. And it's tackling, you know, in a fictional sense at least, a very human... story about various aspects of human nature in a way that I found very, very compelling.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think that that's one of the reasons why, actually, that Schaffer justifies, like in the actual merits of the work, he justifies playing so loose with actual history. Because really, it's not a history that he's trying to tell. What he's trying to do is to create a story that appeals to all those themes that you, of course, find so interesting. He actually described it as basically being like a fantasia on Mozart's life. It's more of a fantasy than it is an actual history.
It's a sort of a set and setting or a canvas in which to paint
more
than anything else. But I think the fact that it's involving, you know, people who, to perhaps more educated Europeans, household names, and creating this story of history in a playful way. Like, even if you didn't know anything about the background and you just watched the film or just read the play, you wouldn't presume that this is a historic telling of the history. And normally I'm very pedantic about caring about those sorts of depictions. Mm. But with this, it's got such life to it that it doesn't matter, I don't think.
Yeah.
There's a sort of this playful, almost zealous approach to things that I find very infectious. And again, in the film, it's presented via the character of Mozart himself. And in the novel, it's present in everyone to a certain extent.
Yes.
This living life in a way that you have such a grand appreciation of it. And although the different characters in the play manifest this in different ways. You know, Mozart's known to be a heavy drinker and a bit of a womanizer.
Likes a fart joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is a bit childish. That's how it manifests in him. In Salieri, it's music and food.
Mm.
And it's sort of how do these pleasures manifest in life that I found interesting.
Yeah.
And there's not even a focal point of the story, but they're just sort of sprinkled in for those who are sort of paying attention in a very nice way.
Definitely. I'll just read this extract from towards the beginning of the play where Salieri talks about his life and the things that he wanted as a young man, where he says, "I wanted fame, not to deceive you. I wanted to blaze like a comet across the firmament of Europe, yet only in one especial way, music, absolute music. A note of music is either right or wrong, absolutely. Not even time can alter that. Music is God's art. Already when I was 10, a spray of sounded notes would make me dizzy, almost to falling. By 12, I was humming my arias and anthems to the Lord. My one desire was to join all the composers who had celebrated his glory through the long Italian past. Every Sunday, I saw him in church, painted on the flaking wall. I don't mean Christ, the Christs of Lombardy, as simpering sillies with lambskins on their sleeves. No, I mean an old candle-smoked god in a mulberry robe, staring at the world with dealer's eyes. Tradesmen had put him up there. Those eyes made bargains, real and irreversible." And so he talks about the fact that, you know, "You gave me this longing for music, Lord. You know, let me live up to that. That longing that you've put into me, make me a great composer. You know, give me those things that I want, fame and, you know, to be the wonder of Europe and for everyone to hear my music, because my music is my means of praising you, your goodness, your, you know, eternal worth." But the thing is, and this is where you get into it from the very beginning, that Salieri immediately makes his own virtue, his goodness, conditional on God's support. Right, he's not actually just going to live a very good, virtuous Christian life for the sake, in and of itself, for its own ends and its own means and the way that it impacts the people around him. He will only be good on the proviso that God grants him the things that he wants in life.
So there are two things I want to say about this. The first of which is that that extract is a particularly good example of the book's representation of a development in the story being much better, or the play, should I say, than the film, because the language used there is, you know, magnificently written. It is very flowery and very emotive in a way that when Salieri is talking about it in the film, he's less poetic about it. He's just more giving you story notes, which I think is a shame, really. So the second point being that I find it interesting that Salieri sort of bargains with God and holds his goodness as one of the aspects that God gets in return. And that it could be interpreted as why he was sort of brought so high and then brought down so low, was to punish him for thinking that he can basically bargain with God with his virtue as a chip on the table. And that's some sort of divine punishment, which I think there's certainly evidence that you could, in both the play and the film, that is an interpretation of it. But I also think that it's interesting as well that he goes back further in time, almost to pre-enlightenment, because of course it says so more explicitly in the play than in the film, that this is, you know, the Enlightenment. This is a grand time of people are no longer bogged down by silly things like, I don't know, superstition or what have you.
Everything that Hume railed against, you know, all those little things, yeah.
And it's interesting that Salieri sort of goes to a pre-Enlightenment notion of God as someone who can be bargained with and you come up with a negotiation. Because sort of post-Enlightenment God was more, it took on a different character in the European mind. And I find that very interesting in how it's presented. But sorry.
You were going
to read another quote.
No, it's all right. I was just going to say that, and also the fact that, so Salieri makes this bargain with God, and it seems very quickly to Salieri that God accepts this pact, he accepts this deal, because Salieri's father dies. And Salieri's father had been a man who had not wanted who had actively discouraged his son from pursuing this path of music and concert and going around the courts of Europe. You know, he wanted him to live a humbler life.
That's in the film, but in the play, I think someone just comes along and he says the following day and whisks him away.
Yes.
Whereas I feel like the way the film presents it is probably a bit better.
Yeah. But also in the film, the way it's described as a miracle as well, right? The death of your father is a miracle. Yeah.
Like his father didn't really do anything wrong.
No.
He just didn't want to encourage him going into music, which, you know.
Most parents have preferred professions for their children. So it's not that unusual, Salieri.
I know when I was talking about, oh, you know, maybe I could be a musician, because I'd been, you know, played since I was a teenager, my parents were like, well, it might be a good idea to have a career just in case. Mm. But they're basically like, yeah, don't be an idiot. And they were right.
Yeah. Well, I've seen all of your guitars. They're there for a reason, aren't they? They have a purpose.
Yeah, ornamentation at the minute. I've hardly been playing.
Yeah. So Salieri ends up going to Vienna, you know, into the heart of the Habsburg Empire. He gains the favour of Emperor Joseph II, you know, the Holy Roman Emperor, who is, I will just say, even though he's a minor character, he's so entertaining. You know, like there's so much comedy that Schaffer squeezes out of him.
He seems very almost charming, a touch bumbling in his depiction, even though, you know, actual historic accounts of the man are glowing and he's not presented badly here either.
No, no, he's definitely presented as well-meaning. And obviously with a passion for music, you know, in the sense that akin to the actual historical Joseph II, he was a great patron of the arts, and you see in this as well. But one of the things that I find interesting is when Mozart comes on the scene, how Mozart is able to push the boundaries of what is acceptable art throughout it. No, we're going to have this one where it's not going to be in Italian, it's going to be in German. No, we're staging this in an Ottoman harem. Yes, we're going to have ballet, even though you banned it by your own decree. Mozart's constantly able to break these barriers for like what the establishment will allow to be seen by the general public. Whereas Salieri is obviously a much more, he plays it much safer. He tries to work within the things that have already been decided are appropriate and to the fashionable tastes of the time, whereas Mozart is obviously more of a trailblazer.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.
Heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.